All right, good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, May 2nd, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup of Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everyone. It is a gray 56 degrees and partly cloudy and squishy here in upstate New York. I don't know if you guys saw those storms that blew through here yesterday, but I think some of those were churning up from that big line of storms that hit eastern Texas a few days ago. I think that kind of shot up here north with some other disturbance up over Canada and Michigan. And we had a monster of a storm that just trucked across New York State yesterday. Didn't leave any damage here, but I saw on the news that right just smack south of the New York line over into PA, they had all kinds of bow echoes and debris fields on radar. And they were pretty sure that a tornado had swept through there. So it was pretty treacherous, but I hope everybody is okay. I haven't seen JJ yet this morning, but those were heading toward him after here. So hopefully, though, everybody made it and everything is very springy and turning green and allergies are going crazy now. So, all right, where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Google AI Cloud Vision, Violence Filtering, and Predictive Policing. And I know I could have been more creative about that title, but I had way too many things going on yesterday, and I had to leave the show until about 5:30 last night before I could even get a title on it. And so I just kind of put whatever. But I could totally see when I don't get creative, it affects the views. So just know it was a good show. The stories were interesting, even if it didn't sound it. We had Google, now that they've learned to recognize cats pretty well on YouTube and in images, they are now teaching Google's robot googly eyes in the cloud to recognize firearms and to recognize organic shapes that maybe are colored red, so they could determine whether or not there's any bleeding. They'll be able to tell whether or not someone's pointing a gun at somebody or if it's sitting on the table. And then they'll be able to hide all those from your view if you find it disturbing. They will allow you to personalize your violence quotient for your feed. And if you don't want to see any images that make you rock back and forth, well, guess what? You can just push one button now, Johnny, because Google's going to save you from seeing anything that might be scary. I mean, like I was talking about yesterday with us being desensitized to violence, I really think we have been. I mean, I grew up in the 80s watching probably some of the most horrific horror movies you have ever seen. And I mean, they're probably way worse now. I think it came to when those Saw movies came out years ago. I couldn't watch after that. They had gotten to be way too realistic, and I had a bad feeling that they were training like the serial killers of the future by putting out movies like that. But back when I was younger, I used to love the scarier movie, the better. The more disgusting the movie, the better. The more science fiction, the better. Horror and science fiction went hand in hand. But I really do think, and I still will say this, though I've argued with myself for 25 years, that all of this violent media is definitely affecting us. Maybe not up front, where we will see signs, where people are out killing people, but you definitely see the niceties of the past of society when people used to care about their neighbor and people used to be friendly with everyone and people used to want to help others. That's now gone. And that's come from many, many, many different facets of the decline of Western civilization that has caused that. But I truly think that us being desensitized to violence, in which case, once that happens, you start losing your empathy, right? Having feeling and concern for others. You start to care more about yourself. We also have this instant gratification society that really pushes that dopamine button and grooms them. I mean, from everything that we have studied over the last few years, looking at the brain, looking at personalities and defects in those personalities, such as psychopathy and some of the things that lead to that, but some of the physical issues that cause potentially psychopathic mental disorder, or whatever they want to call it. You know, Dr. Simon, a lot of the things that he has talked about, just how this whole generation of push buttons has made these self-centered humans. And really, I mean, this is the type of society of the future that is ripe for the picking to merge with the machine. And I really think that that is part of this grand scheme. See, the push button, not only does it addict you to your devices, not only does it make you want more, not only is it stronger in children than it is in adults. So let's make sure we give little Johnny the smartphone game where they can shoot and kill each other. You know, double whammy there. But what is happening is that as they sell us down the river, and it is coming from every direction now, and of course we're going to have AI to cure us, and we're going to have AI to protect us and to filter out our violent images, and oh, to be able to help the police tell them where the next crime is. Oh, look, boop, boop, boop. We saw Johnny paying with cash, but cash has been outlawed. You know, that won't be too long either. It's dirty, people. So we're going to get rid of it. We're going to give you this nifty-pifty little chip right between your thumb and your index finger. And everything will be right on there. Don't worry about it. It won't even hurt. You know, that's where they're headed. But it's going to go even further than that. So we have the military. We have the Department of Defense through the guises of DARPA. Is that a word? Through the guises? Through the tentacles. The tentacles. I like DARPA tentacles. Of DARPA, who are working their way into academia and hospitals and corporations. Sprinkle funding. Mad science gone mad. All for hire. And they are creating things now that were just fantasy a few years ago. They've been able to grow mini brain balls. I don't know if that was DARPA, but it probably was at some point in the very early past, or at least some of their money. That pluripotent stem cell. Now they're talking about doing things like curing, oh, I don't know, being brain dead with squirting these things in there. They're talking about creating little intelligent, potentially intelligent devices. We were looking at a few robot systems over the last few years that they had created, one with a worm brain and one with a mouse brain, just cells, and they let them culture in a dish. And then they implant them into a robot, and they actually can start learning. We found out just the other day that as they have now created the creepiest brain balls yet, we've read about brain balls a few times, they left them in a petri dish for a year to let them grow. And it's like I was saying the other day, I thought they ended that practice, you know, with the CRISPRed embryos that had animal DNA in it. I thought they already set like some ethics there. Not that anybody follows them, especially down deep, dark hallways with screams. But I thought they set some ethics there. That didn't allow for these things to like grow endlessly to see what we end up with. You know, I joked around years back when we first started reading about them using DNA as storage. I don't know if you guys remember that. You know, now we can store cat pictures on DNA. Woo! And millions of terabytes. Actually, it was some huge number. And I mean, it was just in a teaspoon or maybe a pound of DNA. It was like every action, butterfly, flutter, and word a human or animal has uttered over the history of the entire planet Earth could be stored in like a pound of DNA. And so we had kind of joked that in the future, the NSA was going to be growing the Jabba the Hutt out of DNA in a petri dish. to try and make this big pulsating brain bong bong with, you know, real intelligence that they are using to monitor and surveil. And, you know, guys, I don't know, at some point in maybe the bit of a distant future, I could see something like that. You know, after they get sick of the silicon version of the big brain in the sky, they might actually try to grow some sort of hybrid biological cross-patched synthetic brain as they get better and better at understanding all the different bits and pieces and how those neurons go together. And just put that in charge. It's going to be the great Swami. It's going to be like Wizard of Oz, but it's actually going to be the big blue head in the sky. So, yeah, so Google now has their AI cloud vision, which would be frightening to all of us because they were talking about in that very last story we had read about the ultimate unsettling performance where, and maybe we'll start there today, about being on the AI train. They're talking about how they started out the presentation from a satellite. And the satellite's coming down. And they're able to see Earth and see everything in real time. But as they swoop down, they realize that it's showing people and homes and cars. And it's tracking their movements from the sky. Like we've said, it's been very possible for a very long time. But I don't think anyone realized the level that it has gotten to now. And how much this panopticon is a reality. And I mean, we joke, people think you're paranoid. If you get nervous about saying something around your cell phone, and that is not something to point to your friend and laugh at them if they're paranoid around their cell phone, okay? We found out that we are being listened to, watched, bagged, and tagged just about everywhere we go. And unless you're out in the middle of nowhere, in which case we find out still, they could zoom in on you with satellite. And I'll tell you, probably back in the 1970s, I had already investigated because of some weird things that I saw back in the 70s. And I discovered what I think it was. I had already investigated the fact that the FBI was using lasers back in the 1970s. To be able to listen in on conversations, and they could shine it right through your window. You see a little red dot on the wall at 2 o'clock in the morning on Christmas Eve. That, of course, when you were 9 years old, you thought it must have been Rudolph. But I found evidence that they had those toys back in like 1977, 76. I don't know. I don't remember when it was. But I don't know, we had lots of weird stuff going on back then. And that was one of them, but I am certain of it. They had these laser guns that they could shine through a window, and the vibrations of the voices rode along those light waves, and they could hear you on the other end. So guys, if they could do that back in the 70s, and, you know, from who knows how far away, you know, laser can go pretty far, even in a snowstorm. Imagine what they could be doing right now. And DARPA's been already working on how to bend light and stuff in the atmosphere to be able to direct these things properly so they are not derailed by atmospheric moisture. Give them a nice, accurate shot within a few centimeters, we found out, from the upper echelon there. So, I mean, if that's the case, and like you said, if they've been able to do that stuff, be able to even hear things since the 70s, don't think that even standing in a field in the middle of nowhere, that things that you say or your facial expressions or even your gait as you're walking isn't giving you away. Maybe you got a little twitchy eye there, Johnny. All that stuff they've been able to decode. Those are chinks in the human armor. And, you know, our puny human brains weren't able to distinguish a lot of those things unless you'd been lied to a lot or were a good gambler and a poker player and knew how to utilize those to your advantage. But most common man did not know that there even were any such things such as tells that could give things away. You know, there were those of us who, growing up, were probably exposed to some things we shouldn't have been, who maybe learned some little tricks like that when we were young. Thank goodness it was only for research purposes. But most people did not realize that you could give away a lot of what's ticking inside of you without even knowing it. Well, now we've put AI on the case. And now we've hoisted them way up into the sky to shine down like the big eye. Wasn't that song by was it Alan Parsons Project? I loved that band when I was a kid. We had them on 8-track. And if you remember the one Alan Parsons Project album, it was almost like a Pink Floyd. It had a pyramid, which I thought was interesting. I don't remember if it had the beam shining out of it, but then the song, I believe, on that album was Eye in the Sky, Looking at You, which I can't sing first thing in the morning before my coffee, but you know what I'm saying. Back for many years, people used to tell me I was paranoid. You're paranoid, Jill. There's nobody listening. But like I said, when I was a kid, we had some weird stuff going on. And, then we had the phone company. And it is the phone company surveilling us because we had a second phone jack in the house. But I told her, my mom, she's like, if the phone company ever comes to the door, don't let him in. Your dad could go to jail because we had a second phone jack. But we found out that back in those days, Bell Labs and AT&T and that whole conglomerate was way, way, way in bed with the federal government and then the military during the Second World War and all these leading edge technologies that happened. And back in those days, the phone company was the government. And even back in those days, they literally could just flip a switch, doop. If you had one of those newfangled phones that had the pretend push button that would do the dialing, the rotary when you push the button, it was just cool to have push buttons. We had one of those, but it would make little beep beep noises. And if they opened up that line to listen in, you could hear it beep beep. You pick it up, you could hear it psh in the background. I mean, guys, they've been able to surveil us just for our entire lives. We just didn't know it, but we do now. So anyway, let's get to where we kicked this off or ended this yesterday. This is a story about this unsettling performance in San Francisco that shows the world through AI's eyes. They had one of the women playing her cello, and they were already able to like scan her and tell that she was 45% sad and 0.1% disgusted. Just by scanning her while she was playing on stage. And people in the audience thought that was amusing, but minutes later, as this quartet that was up there started playing another piece, a new image appeared behind them on the screen. And at first, it showed Earth through the eyes of a satellite circling above, and then they zoomed in on the ground below. And the AI locked in on your homes. And started zooming around looking at cars and individuals, and then showed them tracking their movements from the heavens. At this time, nobody started laughing because this wasn't amusing. A few minutes ago, it was funny, but this was just very unsettling. So on the AI train, we have Google, Facebook, and Apple now all building services that can analyze human emotions in real time. And over the last few days, we've covered quite a number of stories that talked about being able to analyze human emotion. And we can take this all the way back to a year or two ago when I first started talking about Tommy Insel leaving the National Institute of Mental Health. We found out it was 2015. Thought it was 2016, but no, it was October 2015. So it's almost been 2 years we've been talking about this. And now one of his big things was to be able to use things such as your smartphone, non-invasive devices, at least in this case, when you're talking into it, now when it's a hoochie cam, to be able to determine your mental health status. And they found out that not even your mental health, but they can determine like your health status, diagnosing disease such as heart disease and PTSD and all kinds of other things with just the sound of your voice. And of course, with the sound of your voice, they can tell your emotions. We found that Israeli company the other day, Beyond Vocal, I think they were called, who could, use the smiley face or the sad face to tell just while you're talking to Nana how Nana makes you feel. AI with micro expressions being able to tell whether or not you're telling a lie. I mean, guys, this isn't going to be too far down the road before we're all going to have to be a part of this monitoring. I think with some of these mass shooting events, now we see, of course, they have to protect us from violence online because we had two people, one who committed suicide and one who killed somebody else, on a live stream. So now we got to put this Google Eye in the sky to be able to monitor anything that looks violent and maybe leave it off the interwebs because it might affect you. You know, this in the future, this analyzing human emotion is going to be a really big deal because they will be able to tell whether or not Johnny's starting to fall off the boat, whether or not Johnny might need some intervention. And remember, we have the 21st Century Cures Act that came in all the middle of this. December 2016, it got passed. That has this whole section on neurological disease surveillance, non-invasively. So, I mean, connect the dots, people, because this is where it's heading. And the 21st Century Cures Act is law. It was passed. And it opened the door for all of these companies to get a green rubber stamp from the FDA to accelerate cures. Remember that twanky little video that came out of Congress, doo-doo-doo, about the 21st Century Cures Act. We were going to accelerate cures and get that pesky FDA out of the way. We're going to let them experiment on humans. That's pretty much what it comes down to. Anyway, Google, Facebook, and Apple are all building services that can analyze human emotion in real time. Startups like Descartes Labs and Orbital Insights use similar technology to analyze vast troves of satellite imagery in order to understand human activity and intentions, ding, ding, that humans themselves would have trouble drawing on their own. And remember, this is this predictive stuff that we were talking about. We got predictive policing. They're going to be able to do pre-crime on us in the not-too-distant future. They'll be able to do it from satellite and your cell phone, triangulate, boop, 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 dispatch the drones. I mean, guys, when I have nightmares about this stuff, they're very realistic. And none of these are like in the old days where it was just so far-fetched science fiction that it was never going to come true in your lifetime. But I hate to tell you, it is going to come true in our lifetime. You know, and they're just doing boiling frog right now. Like, look at how cool drones are. Oh, give one to Johnny for Christmas. You know, we want to get little Johnny used to that noise overhead so it doesn't give him nightmares every time he thinks about it. But for people like me, I don't know, that noise really sets me off when I hear it. I can't stand drones. And, you know, I mean, yeah, they're kind of cool. They're really not kind of cool when you think about the implications of what that could mean in the future. I mean, these things, when we put sensors on computers, and we've talked about this, just like the mini brain balls, a computer doesn't have any awareness of the outside world before you give it sensory input. So as we now are developing all these different things, we plug in a camera that's got eyes. We plug in a biosensor of some kind, being able to distinguish what's in the atmosphere, whatever. It's got taste and smell. And now we give it some robotic arms, some tactile functionality. It's got touch. All we got to do is now make it mobile and start giving it the ability to learn, draw conclusions. We're going to talk about some of that today. And we almost got ourselves another life form, potentially, that we are creating that will become more intelligent than us as we feed it data constantly just by being alive every day. And it's not going to turn out too well for us. You know, all throughout history, anytime a more advanced civilization came into contact with a less advanced civilization, it didn't end up turning out too well for the less advanced ones. And Elon Musk has talked about that as well. They're going to make us pets, but it's only going to be the smartest of the humans. The rest of them will probably turn into super slurry to feed the plants or something. Who knows? And by the way, a friend of mine, speaking of that, you know, you got to kind of judge what the globalists are talking about by some of the types of stories that are coming out in propaganda channels, and one of those propaganda channels is BBC. I have a friend who listens to BBC at night, and he'll always message me and say, hey, there's something really good on BBC. There's a really interesting piece on BBC. And, you know, it's always like globalist crap, but whatever. Sometimes it's neat because they do some good investigation into the technology and that, and they have pretty cool British accents, so I can listen to it for a while. A little easier than Wolf Blitzer. But they were doing the show the other night. I didn't hear it, but I heard all about it. And I've read all about it before, about all the great ways to be green, quote-unquote green, right? Of course, we got to be green now on the planet, to bury people. And there's these new green cremations, and I think probably 3-4 years ago, we had looked at some of these new green burials, and I think one of them actually was out of the UK, where they'll turn you into a super slurry. That's why I said that. I was kind of joking, but not really. They'll just use some alkaline substance, and they'll just put you into this big jug of this liquid, and it very slowly decomposes all of your amino acids. Then they can just super slurry you out into the lawn or sell you to a farmer. I don't know what they're planning on doing with it, but you'll be a great fertilizer and you won't take up the space that, you know, a grave would take up. And the costs of graves, of course, are very expensive. But hey, Johnny, you know, you can't leave your mark on this planet because there isn't enough planets for you to leave a mark on anymore. So why don't we just disintegrate you and we can feed you back to the wormies and to the plants? And I mean, yeah, it's kind of a nice idea. I don't know if I would want to be dissolved by some sort of highly corrosive liquid and shot back into the soil. Personally, I kind of like the idea of a crypt with a big scary fanged bat in front of it to scare people away, where I can always be above ground. But that's just me. We also saw one way back when where they were talking about using the bodies for generating electricity as, and I don't remember what they were doing with that one. I don't think they were burning them. I think that one was also some sort of chemical decomposition. But they were using it to generate electricity for the funeral home itself. And potentially, I mean, think about it. They could even use it to power, you know, green power for little communities and stuff. I mean, it's kind of a horrifying thought that they are finding ways to make even dying now be part of the globalist agenda. And, you know, how far is that going to go now? We were talking yesterday about the lack of empathy and how they are grooming the future generations to really have more of a mental profile of a psychopathic disorder, you know, no empathy and desensitized to violence and the me type of mentality, the requirement of the instant gratification and that dopamine button being tantamount to their happiness. Well, in the future, when these kids are older and they're running the show and we're all old and gray, you know, the robots have taken most of all the jobs, and we're all on universal basic income, sitting in our white room with our little implants being monitored 24/7 by Dr. Smartphone. You know, these kids are going to be the ones deciding whether or not we're worth even financing our lives anymore. We're going to be the useless eaters. We're going to be the ones that they tell us once a month we've got to go to the lottery and draw a straw. See who's the next one to go. I read a book like that when I was a kid called The Lottery. That's what they had to do, draw straws, to figure out who was the next one that had to go because resources were so precious. And guys, as they keep pushing this climate change garbage, and I'm telling you, yeah, there's climate change happening, but I have read enough. And this isn't out of tinfoil hat-wearing lunatic publications. I have read enough out of military experimentation and things that they are doing now, of course, to geoengineer the planet. And again, this is not lunacy theory. They've been talking about solar radiation management and injecting things in the atmosphere, and they've been tinkering with it since the days of the Manhattan Project. And you can read all about that with Kurt Vonnegut's brother and some of the things that they were working on even back then. Our climate is changing, but it is because they've made our atmosphere a petri dish in the sky. It's not because you farted too much or you ate too many cheeseburgers and that poor cow let out too much methane. Oh, no, no. It's because the mad scientists have kind of tinkered their way in figuring out how to manipulate things, and they manipulate them for their own benefit. You know, we have disaster capitalism as they make these powerful storms and all these things happen and, oh, make food scarce and flood things out, and they're able to raise all the prices of the commodities. You know, it all works to their advantage. They win on the up or the down, and we are the losers, and it's all in the name of making this full control structure. So if you're afraid, and if you can't make your own living and you can't grow your own food, you can't do any of this stuff. You're going to have to be dependent on the machine, no matter how independent that you want to be. If your tomatoes turn black every time you try to grow them, you're not going to be eating too many. Growing them on your own in your compound in the woods trying to be self-sufficient. Oh, no, no. You're going to have to come to whoever is the one in charge and beg for your food or get your chip or get whatever they require you to get your qubits so you can eat. And guys, I mean, I know I'm just kind of rambling now and it sounds lunatic, but it really isn't. Follow the timeline forward and you will see what I see. And these things are all within the realm of possibility. I mean, none of it is crazy. All right, so back to this on the AI train. So they're all going to start analyzing human emotions. And it'll take us down this very scary path of the future. But don't worry about it, because startups like Descartes Labs and Orbital Insights are using similar technologies to analyze vast troves of satellite imagery in order to understand human activity and their intentions that humans themselves would have trouble drawing on their own. Relying on deep neural networks, which are complex mathematical systems that can learn to perform tasks by analyzing vast amounts of data. And that is why NSA and Alphabet agencies have been collecting everything, because even though they couldn't digest all that data, they now have the capability with the big pulsating brain. Soon to be Jabba the Hutt, blah, 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 in the data center, and maybe even in the AI Google Cloud, where they can analyze these big data sets to draw conclusions. And that is where the money shot is. That is where they are breaking the chinks in the human armor. That's where they're discovering our weaknesses and discovering the patterns that form. These services don't work perfectly, but don't worry about it, because they are improving rapidly, and they are rapidly moving from the lab into the real world. This guy that was working on some of this technology named Piglin built this technology using open source software, and of course it's all about open source. Remember, if they democratize everything and they give it to the planet, then everyone can have a chance to build their own super powerful weapon. So this open source software that runs neural networks inside Google and other companies and some of the imagery during this concert that they had came pre-recorded. But in many cases, these neural nets that they were using during this performance to track the cello player and the rest of the band in real time was happening in real time. And what they want out of the art are things that help us see the world around us. And they were trying to make a point that AI has gotten to the point already that we should be aware of its capabilities. We just keep tra-la-lying along, being distracted by all the things that are going on in front of us, but we are not thinking or processing what is going on behind the scenes. The guy who was in charge of this unsettling performance showing the world through AI's eyes, Piglin, is best known for his work that explores the depths of government surveillance, from photos to undersea cables tapped by the NSA to a book that maps the Pentagon's global spy network. And this year, he began a residency at Stanford's Cantor Art Center, which is a major hub of artificial intelligence research. But he isn't toying with old ideas or cultural cliches about robot overlords. No, no, no. He is exploring what's happening at the sharp end of computer vision. Ding, like I said. Look out, people. Robot googly eyes are coming. And we're going to be sorry that we gave them five senses. Poke them out. That's what I say. Originally, Piglin, get out the spray paint. We'll get some black spray paint. Originally, Piglin wanted a residency inside OpenAI, which is a billion-dollar lab bootstrapped by Tesla CEO Elon Musk and Y Combinator President Sam Altman. But OpenAI aims to accelerate the progress of artificial intelligence, even as it says it's protecting the world from dangers such as acceleration may bring. But OpenAI balked at what he wanted to do, so Piglin went to Stanford. His new residency touches on some of the same things that runs through his work on government surveillance. The two overlapped when the quartet played Terry Riley's One Earth, One People, One Love, and those AI overlords zoomed in on them from above. How funny would that be? Actually not, but I would find the amusement in it. And at the same time, Piglin addressed the sometimes mysterious, sometimes unsettling ways that modern AI learns on its own. We've talked about that too. Google has pitted two AIs against each other, and their goal is to learn as much as they can while beating the other artificial intelligence. If we've started battle bots mentally, it's going to make them get smarter and smarter without any human intervention at an exponential rate. That's frightening, people. I mean, it is happening right before our very eyes. And it is growing very quickly. It's like a little child growing in fast forward now. And one of these days, you know, Terminator's just going to step right up and pull up to your door, delivering you a FedEx package. I wouldn't doubt it. So anyway, by learning to analyze more data more carefully than a human ever could, this company means, among other things, that humans can't really dissect decisions that they make. Seeing machines, as Piglin says, aims to explore this mystery. It's trying to look inside the software that is running AI. It's trying to look into the architecture of different computer vision systems and trying to learn what it is that these vision systems are seeing. How are they looking at images? And what are the social, ethical, economic, and political consequences of these different modes of AI being able to see, which are becoming more and more ubiquitous? Like I said, it's going to be everywhere. Let's give 5G to Africa so we can have a hoochie cam. You know, it's not about hoochie cams and keeping you safe. It is about being able to monitor you ad nauseum from every level. From a single point up there to a single dashboard to know what is going on the ground 24/7. This came to the fore at the end of the performance when Kronos, this band, played the first movement of Steve Reich's Different Trains, which is a musical exploration of train lines driving the expansion of the United States in the early 20th century. It was a play on words because, like the idea of trains and training sets, he thought it was kind of funny because it served as a symbol for the way neural networks are careening, which is a good term. We are careening out of control into the future, largely without human help. And as the band played, countless photos flashed on the screen, all lifted from ImageNet, which is one of the chief databases for training computers to recognize specific images. It was beautiful, almost mesmerizing, so much of today's AI research. But Piglin was also hinting that this beauty may morph into something else, echoing the worries that so many that AI will not just destroy our privacy, but it will steal our jobs, ding, and perhaps even grab control over our own world. Ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling. And Piglin is exploring the relationship between technology and progress. And as he wrote in the program for Sight Machine, progress was in quotation marks. And he sounds like he's a man after my own heart. Because that's exactly the vision that I am seeing. Guys, I don't know who out there could really, with a good conscience or a straight face, be thinking that any of this technology is going to be used for good. Remember, a lot of the military-industrial complex is who is financing a lot of this research. And anytime you involve the military-industrial complex, hey, it's all about the war machine being able to control what our enemies are doing. Now, remember, they're doing all kinds of brain research, and I don't know. There's one story that's, like, way 9 articles down that I've been trying to get to for 2 weeks. And I don't know if I just, like, jump on the horse and we go there, if we work our way down through and kind of regurgitate some of the things that we've talked about over the last few weeks. But here, I guess we might as well read this one. We've read parts of it before, but we'll just start this one. Machine vision algorithm learns to recognize hidden facial expressions. Microexpressions reveal your deepest emotions even when you are trying to hide them. Now a machine vision algorithm has learned to spot them. With a wide ranging application from law enforcement to psychological analysis. And you know, guys, whoever thought that just a camera, right, just a plain old camera connected to a computer would be like one of the big chinks in the human armor, that we have given these things googly eyes now and they can monitor us and not just see what we're doing, but be able to determine just by watching humans intently what our intentions might be and whether or not you might be a danger to yourself or others in the future. And then when we give them robot hearing, voice analysis could diagnose disease through your smartphone. Oh, yes. Researchers enlist smartphones and machine learning to find vocal patterns that might signal post-traumatic stress disorder or even heart disease. We found out all kinds of other things. Any type of mental health disorder that typically goes underdiagnosed. We have good old Tommy Insel in charge now, and he'll be finding ways to do psychiatric diagnosis just by the sound of your voice. And hey, it'll be good for everybody. It'll reduce the cost of healthcare. It'll make the world a better place. And for those of us who have been deemed to be mentally ill, well, don't worry about that one either, because the military, good old DARPA, is funding brain-computer interfaces to control your feelings and to manipulate those brain chemicals. $70 million program will try to develop brain implants able to regulate emotions in the mentally ill. So, hey, they got a solution. So don't worry about it. And if they even find out that you might be one of those people who tends to not tell the truth because they've scanned you a million times looking at your hidden facial expressions and listening to your voice patterns to determine that you just cannot tell the truth, maybe you are a a chronic liar. Well, they can zippity-zap your brain. Brain stimulation influences honest behavior. They can burp, burp, burp. And it's not that you're thinking you're going to get an electrical shock, that you'll start telling the truth. Oh, no, no. They literally can zap just in a few right spots to increase honest behavior using non-invasive brain stimulation. I mean, there's all kinds of things that I've been reading about with this non-invasive brain stimulation. This is the same technology that DARPA is using to be able to zap you right in the neck on that vagus nerve, part of the DelectRx program, to help you quickly learn a foreign language or how to fly an airplane. So put on a seatbelt. We can dial emotions up and down with that ELF emit that is coming, and we can zippity-zap your brain to get you to be honest, to get you to learn, or to fix your dopamine ratios. So in the 21st Century Cures Act, Section 399S-1, Surveillance of Neurological Diseases, yes. So it has been deemed that we will have a national neurological condition surveillance system in the United States. And that's where we ended up today. That's where we are going to kick it off now. And this is where we are headed. So we covered this story before, August 2016, neural dust, and this is where it's going to lead. Could enable a Fitbit for the nervous system. DARPA and the University of California, Berkeley. And a technology with the potential to blur the boundaries between biology and electronics. And it has just leaped a major hurdle in the race to demonstrate its feasibility. A team at UC Berkeley, led by neuroscientist Jose Carmina and electrical and computer engineer Mikhail Mabaritz, has provided the first demonstration of what researchers call, quote-unquote, ultrasonic neural dust to monitor neural activity in a live animal. They recorded the activity of the sciatic nerve and a leg muscle of an anesthetized rat in response to electrical stimulation applied to its foot. His lab has always worked on the boundary between biology and man-made things, says Mabaritz. And we build tiny gadgets to interface synthetic stuff with biological stuff. The system uses ultrasound for both wireless communication and the device's power source, eliminating both wires and batteries. And we read about that technology before, that they are able, maybe it was the Memrist, or they were able to use ultrasound and just the vibration from the ultrasound that is around you in your environment to power a piezoelectric crystal that it would never need any type of charge. It consists of an external transceiver, what the team calls a dust mount, and we've talked about those. Those have been in development for 20-plus years. I learned about those when I was in tech support way, way, way back when. It's about 0.8 by 1 by 3 millimeters in size, and it is implanted inside the body. The transceiver sends ultrasonic pulses to a piezoelectric crystal in the implant, which converts them into electricity to provide power. The implant, this neural Fitbit, records electrical signals in the rat, in this case via electrodes, and uses this signal to alter the vibration of the crystal. These are reflected back to the transceiver, which then allows the signal to be recorded. And this is the very first time someone has used ultrasound as a method of powering and communicating with extremely small implantable systems. They plan to develop implants that can stimulate as well as monitor nerves in your body, allowing closed loop control of nervous system activity. So they're going to turn us into like puppets, literally. This has a potential applications in the emerging field of bioelectric medicine, which promises to deliver a whole new class of therapies called electroceuticals. We've talked about electroceuticals before. GlaxoSmithKline, woo, recently announced that it is teaming up with Google's sister company, Verily Life Sciences, and that is exactly where Tommy Insel went, to create a new company called Galvani Bioelectronics, which will be developing implants that can modify nerve signals in an effort to treat chronic illnesses. And I'm sure they're going to also work on mental illness. I mean, guys, this is literally where we're going. Animal studies already suggest that this technology can be used to treat type 2 diabetes. And they are also looking into treating bladder control problems and bowel diseases. I mean, where is this heading? This is the very beginning, guys, and that's what I keep saying. This is just the early infant days of this technology, and we're already at mind-blowing technologies. And speaking of mind-blowing, DARPA's biotech chief, and this is January 9, 2017, DARPA's biotech chief says 2017 will, quote, blow our minds, unquote. And I think he was being kind of literal there. The Pentagon's research division is betting its high risk, high rewards program will change medicine. And this is what I said, people. We have DARPA investing in medicine. And of course, they're going to sell it to you as a cure. But remember, it's all about control and the panopticon. The Pentagon's Research and Development Division, more affectionately known as DARPA, the creative force behind, they rolled this one out, Internet and GPS, retooled itself 3 years ago to create a new office dedicated to unraveling biology's engineering secrets. And this is, we've talked about this office lots of times. This is this new biological technologies office, also known as the BTO. The BTO has a mission to, quote, harness the power of biological systems and design new defense technology. Ding, ding, ding. Over the past year, with a budget of $296 million, it has been exploring challenges, including memory improvement, zip, 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 zap, human-machine symbiosis, and speeding up disease and detection response. DARPA is hoping for some big returns, and the director of its BTO, which is neuroprosthetics researcher Justin Sanchez, recently spoke with Scientific American about what to expect from his office in 2017, including work on neural implants to aid healthy people, ding, in their everyday lives, and advances, he says, that will change the game in medicine. Step up and get your implant. So they're going to ask him a couple questions. Before your office was created in April 2014, DARPA had already worked on some biological projects, including research on combating antibiotic resistance and mental health interventions, and we've covered both of those. What changed with the creation of your office? Well, he says, we've been doing biological work at the interface of biology and engineering for many years, but it was scattered throughout all of our offices. So with our new office, there was recognition that biological technologies we're going to play such a crucial role in not only shaping where our country is going, but threats coming to our country. So we need a focused, comprehensive effort going forward. So mental health interventions and antibiotic resistance is all in the name of national security, people. This is what it's all about. This is the war machine that is funding these very technologies. Don't fall into the trap. They are not going to cure you. They are going to turn you into a node on the network. In particular, intrigued by the BTO's hope to develop programmable microbes to produce needed medications on the fly, an effort to sidestep concerns about stockpiling the right drugs or worrying about complex transport logistics. Where is that work now? We've talked about that as well, the shape-shifting immune system, DNA type, splicing and dicing, them being able to create biologics on the fly because, you know, chicken eggs take so long to make things such as flu vaccines and whatever. They were doing all kinds of experimentation with tobacco and genetically modified things, being able to express chemicals out of biologically modified bacteria and things. Well, he says that's a program called Living Foundries, and we talked about that one probably about 4 years ago as well. Like a foundry where we would be building something that is alive. Traditionally, we use chemistry to make new compounds or drugs, but recently we've realized that microbes like yeast and bacteria can also produce compounds. And yes, they've enslaved the yeast and bacteria to turn them into factories. We can program those, so that would be genetically modifying them, to make compounds by first understanding the chemical pathways that they use. If we take yeast, yeast uses sugar for a variety of pathways to produce alcohols. And if you reprogram those pathways, you potentially have yeast that could build a variety of different compounds that they weren't initially designed to make. And we would still use the same feedstock like sugar. The team designed the genetic codes that would be needed to reprogram the yeast. This is horrifying. And you know, humans are going to be next, by the way. And that is such a different idea about how to revolutionize the way we build compounds. The program sets out to produce 1,000 new molecules never before seen throughout the duration of the program, which has still 3 years left. And that team is well on its way. They have produced close to 100 new compounds already using these new pathways in yeast. And it's also thinking about biology and marrying it with engineering tools and then using those two very components to design something. So, let's see. What about the BTO? What are you most excited about for 2017? Well, he says it's like your kids. You can't have just one favorite. I have multiple favorites. Let me share a few that will be really important in 2017. The first is what we have being called, quote, outpacing infectious disease. Ding, ding. Our current approach, whenever a new pathogen hits our shores, as everybody scrambles, we need to get ahead of any pathogens that may hit our shores and be as ambitious as we can to take pandemics off the table. So we have pioneered new work in DNA and RNA to immunization. Specifically, we're thinking about nucleic acid approaches to immunization, the idea that you can tell your cells to produce antibodies with the right code and produces antibodies that would be effective against any pathogen. So you'd get a shot, but that shot would have code in it to tell your cells and genetically modify you how to respond to that pathogen. And that would lead to near instantaneous immunity if you step right up against that new pathogen seen or never before seen and give it the ability to fight against it. And if you think about the ways we used to do things, where it would take months, if not years, to identify a pathogen and manufacture vaccines, we now have a great new way with shape-shifting immune systems that can genetically modify you. So there you go, people. That's probably his most exciting, genetically modified humans to combat disease. So if I didn't know any better, I would think that there is going to be a new pandemic in our future. If DARPA has been chugging right along with this new research, they are funding all kinds of studies, and their deep brain stimulation is actually another one. Zip, zippity, zap. And that's going to be done wirelessly before you know it. All right, guys. It's just a
UCY.TV. Why don't you stick around for more awesome radio?